The Jets Collective is live, ladies and gentlemen, episode number 17. My name is Jake Asman, joined as always by ESPN's Rich Cimini and BT Unleashed Brandon Tierney. We got a ton to talk about, including our adventure down in Atlantic City for Rich and myself with Wayne Corbett and a bunch of crazy Jet fans. But BT, we missed you, man. I know your kid had a huge playoff game over the weekend. You were telling us off air. So I hope it was worthwhile because we had a blast in Atlantic City. There's no doubt about that.
It's always worthwhile, anything with the kids. Tough loss, though. But I saw some video. I saw a lot of cheerleaders there. Jake, hopefully you behaved yourself, buddy. We're married men. So, I mean, Jake, hopefully you enjoyed yourself, pal.
It was a blast. I think the biggest star there was not Wayne Corbett or Larry Johnson of the Knicks or Fireman. I think it was Rich Cimini. The amount of people that were dying to take pictures with Rich and talk Jets with him. It was awesome to see Rich.
Yeah, I had an absolute blast. Unfortunately, BT would have loved to have had you there, but totally understand that family comes first. And yeah, this was fun. You know, it rained a little bit, but you hardly knew it because everyone was just having such a good time at the pool. It was great to see Wayne Corbett. You know, we don't get a chance to connect that often, maybe once a year at training camp, but he was in a great mood. I think he had a blast signing. Yeah, there you go. Wayne and I posing for some pictures, and he was great with the fans, and the fans love seeing Corbett. It just reinforces how enormously popular this guy is. I mean, you knew it, but when you see it live, it goes to another level. So it was a great, great weekend for sure.
Forget about Corbett. Rich, Jay, can you rewind and replay those first 20 seconds again?
I could do you one better, BT. How about that? It was awesome. I mean, we got Rich and Fireman Ed here. I took a picture with Rich and Richie from Jets Media. Does a great job covering the Jets. And you brought up Corbett, Rich. I just want to shout out Wayne because I mean, I've been lucky enough to have been around some professional athletes doing this and have interactions with them, and I've worked with a couple of them on events before. I mean, at one point, it was monsooning, it felt like, out there, and Wayne refused to, like, stop signing autographs or take pictures with fans. You wouldn't even know that it was raining the way he handled himself. He was great. Then I actually got a chance to play blackjack with him later in the night. He's a great blackjack player, and I'll tell you guys this quick story. So we're playing at one point, and I'm sitting directly next to him at the table. And we win a big hand, the dealer busts, and he taps me on the shoulder. He goes, count how much that is. So I'm like, okay, 25, 50, 60, 70, 80. And he goes, 80, and he gives me a dead arm. And I'm just like, that's incredible. So
lucky number 80.
You that's know. Right. So Corbett was just the nicest with all the fans. And a big thank you to Lou B and the entire HQ2 staff for helping us put an awesome event together for Jet fans. People are already dying to know when next year's is going to be. And hopefully it's bigger and better. More and more people will be there. But just again, great to hang out with Rich and so many Jet fans over the weekend.
Did you win? Did you win money?
Yes, I actually did. I didn't lose. Okay. Left up money. Played with Wayne the next day before I left, and we won some money. I actually left, and Wayne was still playing with a couple of the other Jet content guys who were hanging around.
Now, what was Rich? Was Rich pulling the nickel slots? What was Cimini doing?
Yeah, my wife and I, we went out to, we hit the casino a little. We had a great dinner in the hotel at the Italian restaurant in the hotel. It was awesome. And we went down to the casino for a little while, lost a few bucks on the slots, didn't play blackjack, but had I known Corbett was, you know, patrolling the premises, it was a lucky charm, obviously. I would have gone there and sat next to you guys, but it was a great weekend, and it was just fun meeting all the Jet fans. I mean, it's crazy. The team has been so bad for so many years, but yet these fans are so passionate and so loyal. And some of them say, yeah, I know I'm crazy, but I'm in it, you know, and I can't get out of it. And so I respect that, you know, and so love the passion and the determination that maybe things are going to turn around.
The passion's always been there, but I feel like, and you guys were mixing it up with a couple of hundred Jet fans. Did you guys get the collective sense that a little more optimism, enthusiasm for the direction of the franchise is underway? I kind of sense that on my show online, but was that kind of the deal out there?
Rich, you tell me, because I usually hear from the same type of fan. It's, I like Muji, I don't know about Glenn, or it's, you know, it's, yeah. I like their future, but I don't know about the head coach. Some version of that is what I usually get.
Yeah, some skepticism about the coach and the quarterback. I think fans were generally optimistic, but when we started getting down to the nitty gritty and talking records, projected records, I think maybe one guy I talked to thought 9 wins Everyone else was pretty realistic. They were like in the 6 to 8 category, which is
okay.
Pretty much where I reside right now. I'm more in the 6 to 7 range. But I think the fans are realistic. I think they understand the process of what's going on, this rebuild. And but there's always hope, right? That's what you're a fan yeah. for. You know, you're a fan because you're hoping against hope that something good happens.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's but the thing is too, like, there's blind hope and unfounded hope. But you know, listen, you tell me the average. You know, 6-7 wins. That's doubling last year's win total. And you know, I mean, it doesn't seem like I don't know. It's as beaten down or as downtrodden or as hopeless as it's been for many previous years at this point. Like back, you know, really. Let's face it, last 7, 8, 9 years, you bump into a Jet fan, this is going to be miserable. Yeah. I'm not sensing that, but yeah, so, I mean, it's coming. Camp is around the corner. I'm pumped up. We're pumped up. Let's roll.
Let's get into some topics because we got some significant news involving the Jets quarterback for the season, Geno Smith. Again, you're watching the Jets Collective. If you're new, like the video. If you've been here, like the video. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. As always, we are presented by Prize Picks. Geno Smith has been cleared. I'm going to pull up the tweet that Rich Cimini sent out, of course, from the Davie Police Department. I'll read it, and then we could address it. Update from the Davie, Florida Police. The Geno Smith case, stemming from a June 21st dispute with a woman at his home, has been declared inactive by police. The investigation has concluded, and no charges are being brought. Future investigative action is contingent on additional information or evidence being brought forward, per a police spokesperson. Quote, no further investigative steps can be reasonably taken with the information presently available, per the investigator's report. So, Rich, this is your tweet up there on the screen. Your thoughts on what this all means for Geno now going forward?
Well, you know, it means that, you know, the league is, you know, the league still has a prerogative to look into it if they see fit. I doubt they will continue. I got a 6-page police report here that came in from the Davie Police Department. So I got a chance to really go through the details of what allegedly happened. And so just to cut to the chase and get to the important part, neither side, I mean, they interviewed Geno at the scene. They interviewed this woman at the scene, and neither one, you know, they scheduled follow-up interviews, you know, and, you know, they wanted to get a sworn statement from Geno and the woman, Kristen Stubbs, but no one gave a sworn statement. You know, she said she would. They called. They tried to set something up. There were multiple follow-up phone calls by police, but Kristen Stubbs eventually decided not to give a sworn statement. Geno Smith, through his lawyer, decided not to give a sworn statement. So without testimony from both sides, sworn testimony, without security footage from Geno's house outside, he has these cameras. He claimed he didn't know how to use them. For some reason, police didn't try to obtain the footage. They went by a Ring cam footage, which showed no altercation. So without a witness, without sworn statements from both sides, and without security footage, they really had no evidence to go forward. And that's why they are putting it in the inactive category.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly wouldn't say it was baseless because we still don't know what happened, but there's a certain protocol. Like if you're going to file charges, you've got to give sworn testimony, statements, and all that stuff. You know, and I think that we did a good job, really. I think we were fair to everybody involved. I think that we were open. I think that we were honest. But I also think that we were very aware that we're kind of going into an aspect of sports that of stuff that's not necessarily our expertise. So and threading that needle's tough. But I think that, again, our instincts were right early because it just languished and lingered for so long. When you have high profile people and the police department's basically saying it's inactive, it's not active, whatever. I mean, there were a lot of clues that it probably might wind up this way. And pending the league is Rich, whatever they might do, which is probably nothing at this point. But I think we were kind of on point. And now he's got to bring his driver's license and stop going 75 to 40 and, you know, and worry about getting the Jets in the end zone, boys. Now that's where we're at.
Or hire a driver. That was going to be my point. You know, get someone to either, you know, attach the license to, you know, his body somehow, or get a driver, Geno, because it's the last thing the Jets need is another incident with him being pulled over.
Yeah, I think the one thing that jumped out at me at this police report is that Geno claims that he had $20 million worth of watches and jewelry in his home that she initially took out of the home. which was part of the dispute, I'm thinking to myself, $20 million in watches and jewelry. I mean, you know, wow, that's a lot to have in your house. It's a lot to have anywhere, but to have it in your home is pretty remarkable. And so, you know, this goes away. You know, this basically goes away. I've covered cases like this in the past where there's a financial arrangement. I'm not saying that was the case here, but, you know, I covered cases like where there's a, you know, look, I'll pay you a certain amount of money. Let's just drop this whole thing. And so maybe that happened here. I don't know. I'm strictly speculating, but it has gone away. And Geno Smith can come to training camp with nothing really hanging over his head, except for maybe some optics that he might have to address. But legally, he's clear.
He might want to find a new financial advisor is what he might want to do. $20 billion in watches. Now, I mean, I can't even wrap my mind around that, but it's like he's Tom Brady, who was part owner of the Raiders, or Tiger Woods, yeah, or Peyton Manning, who's got production companies, or Jeter, you know, or A-Rod, who owns the T-Wolves partially, and he's got probably $300-$500 million in the bank. I mean, did Geno really make that much money? Then you mix in multiple mansions, multiple, like, $200,000-$300,000 cars. Hey, be smart, buddy. You don't have a whole lot of football left. If this fizzles out with the Jets, then you're pretty much done in terms of being a starter. I hope he invested wisely. That sounds idiotic to me. I'm just going to be honest with you.
That's what it says in the police report.
Wow. So,
yeah. Must be nice to have $20 million in watches.
In watches.
Other bling, man. That's crazy.
Watches and jewelry.
So. I mean, not even like $20 million in art, which is not going to really depreciate. Or a $20 million mansion, which you can resell and maybe make $8, $9, $10 million back on it. I'm not an antique collector. I don't know. I'm sure the watches are good. $20 million in watches? Now I really question his judgment. I've been supporting Geno.
That's probably like 10 times the amount of what his home is worth. So I'm just telling you what it says in the report.
I know. I believe you. I'm just, hey, Geno, somebody just hold them down until training camp starts, will you?
Well, he likes nice things. He drives nice cars. He's got a nice home from what I've seen in the pictures. And Jet fans, all they want is for him to play some nice quarterback. That's what they want.
You know? And by the way, Jake, the irony too. $20 million in watches and your Ring camera doesn't work. Or you don't know how to work your security.
He didn't know how to obtain the footage from his security cameras that were all over the place. He did get the Ring footage, and he gave that to police, and they didn't see any physical altercation on the Ring camera.
I'm just curious, Rich, you might not know the answer to this, but how much has Geno made in his career? Because to have that much in, you know, watches and jewelry, and obviously he's got all these cars, as we've seen him be pulled over in two different high-end vehicles. Like, how much money has Geno made as a player? I know he was a backup for a lot of his career, but has he made over $100 million on field?
He might be close to that. You know, we could probably look that up, but he's had some good contracts. You know, he's kind of had two careers, right? He had the backup. You know, he was making the rookie contract with the Jets and then basically making minimum type salaries for a number of years. And then he got a couple of good deals. This deal he got from the Raiders last year was a really good deal for him. The Jets are paying $3 million. I think the Raiders are paying, what, $18 million this year? So he's making $21 million this year off the deal. And so, Geno's, I would venture to say he's probably north of $75 million.
I got the number for you. All right, so now let's do a little math here. And again, I'm not an accountant.
Are we close?
No, it's actually more. He's made, I'm going to round it off, $120 million so far, right? In just NFL contracts, off the field stuff, not counting. Contractual worth, right? Bang, split that, taxes. I know every state's different, but you slice it in half. $120 goes to $60 million. You get about a 3 or 4% fee for your agents. Now you sliver a little bit more. So you're telling me that if he's got $60 million in totality, right, that he's got $20 million in watches? This is getting worse as the show's going on.
I guess. I mean, no income tax in Florida, by the way, so maybe he saves a little bit there. But
that's true. But, you know, agent fees, what? Is it 3%, Rich, 3-4?
I think it's 3%. But, you know, he has a manager. Actually, this woman who was involved in the dispute with his he described this woman as his manager. She had, and part of her job was childcare responsibilities, which kind of was like the root of this whole issue.
Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, God bless Gino, man. If he has $20 million in watches and jewelry, then, wow, that's stunning.
And a 42-56 career record as a starter. So he's done okay for himself.
Yeah.
So not too shabby. Well, you brought up an agent fee, which is a pretty good segue to the next topic here, because it was revealed from the agent of Terrion Arnold, Nicole Lynn, at the court, or the legal situation, I guess we're at court, Rich, you could talk more about this, that the Jets were among the teams that apparently reached out to Nicole Lynn expressing interest in Terrion Arnold, who got released by the Lions. So as you see Rich's tweet there on the screen, it was the Jets, it was the Colts, the Texans, and Seahawks, apparently all within 24 hours, reached out to Nicole Lynn, Arnold's agent, about potentially playing for their team. What can you tell us about this, Rich?
Well, for those who haven't heard about this story, and I'm sure most everyone has, you know, he was charged with armed robbery and kidnapping. So he is facing a potential life sentence down in Tampa, Florida. There's been a lot said and a lot written about this. Now, Nicole Lynn, what she was doing there, prosecutors wanted to essentially enforce house arrest, where he wouldn't be able to travel. He'd have to have a GPS monitor on him. But so she was testifying that because of potential employment opportunities around the NFL, that it would be unfair to keep him housebound with a GPS monitor. And so she was saying in court under oath that, yes, there have been four teams that have expressed interest. The Texans worked him out officially. And so she also said that she expected him to sign with an NFL team within 45 days. So that's the situation there. It's a really, really interesting situation. He is a free agent, of course. I know some people have speculated that, you know, he could go on the commissioner's exempt list, but you can't put a player who is not under contract to a team on the commissioner's exempt list. Do I think that he could wind up on that list once he signs with the team? I absolutely think that is a possibility. It's kind of a purgatory for players who are facing serious legal situations. That Roger Goodell can come in and say, hey, let's slow down. We don't want this guy on the field, so we're going to put him. It's a glorified timeout, basically, the commissioner's exempt list. And so I think the Jets, from what I understand, their interest was due diligence. I'd be really surprised if they pursued this all the way in terms of signing him. I think it would be, personally, my own opinion, I think it would be a bad look, you know, for the team. You're trying to build a culture. Why take on this added distraction? He's a first-round pick in 2024. He did not have a good year last year with the Lions. I know he's got talent, so teams will bend the rules. Not bend the rules, but, you know, they will go out of their way to bring talent in. I'd be surprised if he ended up with the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this guy's got bigger issues than, you know, 3rd-and-7 technique, getting a little handsier, getting a couple of penalties, or getting, you know, biting on a double move here. You might be in jail forever, so... I mean, the one thing, I think due diligence is the proper term. I mean, you said the Texans, the Colts, and the Seattle Seahawks. Seattle, they won the championship, pretty much a platinum organization. Texans stepped back last year, but a well-run franchise. Colts a little all over the map. I mean, the fact that Glenn was around him to at least speak to his character, that is, you know, even though this stuff is a real turnoff for me, at least that early stage of investigation, kick the tires on the most cursory level. I'm not going to go nuts. I can't imagine he's in a Jets uniform. But Aaron knows him a little bit, and you want to lean on Aaron for that. Why not? It's a resource.
Do you think their interest, Rich, is because they have some questions about their own cornerback room, or the two aren't directly related?
Yeah, I think there's probably some – that's probably because of it. But I think the main reason is because of the connection with Aaron Glenn. He coached him as a rookie in 24 with Detroit. He was part of the scouting process. They got him out of Alabama. I know Nick Saban – gave a glowing recommendation letter to Terrion Arnold, delivered it to the court on his behalf just recently. So he has Nick Saban vouching for him. And so obviously that carries a lot of weight because of who he is. And so it's a really fascinating subject. I just did some research before we came on the air. I'm thinking, like, how good is this guy? Is he worth it? And so I checked my trusty Next Gen Stats website, which I always love. And last year, there were 96 cornerbacks in the NFL who played at least 150 coverage snaps. Out of those 96, Terrion Arnold ranked 96th and yards allowed wow. per coverage snap as the nearest defender. So wow. he averaged 1.9 yards per snap as the nearest defender on pass plays. The league average is 1.1. So basically he had a bad year. He only played 9 games. He's battled injuries. He's been an underachiever so far. But he's 6 foot. He's a really good athlete. He comes from Alabama. The talent is there. He just hasn't played to it yet. So that's why some of these teams are interested.
The one thing that I would add, and I didn't even know that Nick Saban wrote that type of letter on his behalf. Nick seems to be a man of real principle. And it's not like he's writing this letter so that he can benefit as a coach, where you might get a little selfish and blur the lines of what's right and wrong, or, you know, moral or immoral, whatever. So I find that interesting. But I got a question for both of you guys, and I'll answer it after you guys. Jake, go first. Think about and contrast this to something else we talked about. That's very different, but you'll see where I'm going. Would you have felt more comfortable with Arnold being on the Jets or Sorsby being on the Jets?
I think I actually would feel better about Arnold because Sorsby's a quarterback, and there's just so much that comes with it when you play that position beyond just like what you do on the field. There's mm-hmm. just so much more attention on a quarterback than there is a corner, if that makes sense. Even though,
yeah, total sense.
It's
yeah.
you know what if it's true. Obviously, I don't want Arnold on the Jets, but let's say he's continuing to deny any wrongdoing and he's allowed to play. I think it's a different conversation. So that's a really good point, though, because I think you could argue either one.
Well, because – and I say that because – and, Rich, I want you to obviously answer this, but, you know, one of – and I was more Sorsby, pro-Sorsby, or at least pro-investigating the possibility of Sorsby than you guys for the most part. But one of the things I would always bring up is, hey, you know, there's guys in the league who have been charged with or at least accused of rape and drugs and all – I mean, the entire gamut of crime – and they're allowed to make a living. And I was just curious, Rich, do you feel the same way as Jake or no?
Yeah, I do. Because of the quarterback position, when you're the quarterback of an NFL team, you're basically the CEO, you're the face of the franchise. I think, especially for a team like the Jets that has struggled in a huge market like New York, it takes a special kind of makeup to do that job. And I would have had major concerns about Sorsby. As for Arnold, I mean, look, in this country, we're innocent until proven guilty. So there is a chance that maybe this case is adjudicated and nothing happens. He's cleared of all charges. So that is entirely possible. I'm sure he's got very expensive lawyers who are trying to extricate him from this situation. But so I would probably lean more towards Jake, and I'd be a little more concerned about Sorsby than Terry and Arnold. He's a cornerback. I don't want to say you could just kind of like do it quietly, because if he ever came to New York and they signed him, it wouldn't be quiet. It would be a major news story because of what's happened here. But as a cornerback, you can almost, you know, hide. On the field, you know, from, you know, if you, you know, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. I got you.
Comments, questions, your super chats, we'll make sure we hit. We got Q&A coming at the end of this episode, so get those in now. We'll make sure we hit them at the end. Today's episode of the Jets Collective is brought to you by our friends at SeatGeek. Week one is upon us. If you're a baseball fan, the Dodgers are in town, so you can get some tickets. I might buy some tickets to Yankees Dodgers this weekend using SeatGeek and that code COLLECTIVE10. You'll get 10% off. Again, the link is in the description. You can just download the app yourself, take out your phone in the App Store, and use the code at checkout, and you will save 10%. Shout out to SeatGeek for sponsoring the Jets Collective. Jamal Adams, he wants back. He's been tweeting. He's been posting Instagram comments. Last year, he did something similar as well. The ex-Jet wants to return to the Jets. Geno Smith is back with the Jets. So, Rich Cimini, could Jamal Adams find a way to be back with the New York Jets as well?
Well, he did play for Aaron Glenn briefly in Detroit. You know, that on Jamal's journey, he did have a brief stopover in Detroit a couple of years ago. So, there is some familiarity. I would be surprised if that happened. The Jets have a lot of numbers at safety right now. I think they have 5 or 6 safeties that I would consider like strong contenders to make the roster. So that's not particularly a need position. However, I will say this. Jamal played linebacker for the Raiders last year. And if they did it, I know this is not going to be a popular opinion because I know Jet fans are down on Jamal because of the way it ended. And it ended very badly with the Jets. And I'm sure Jamal would admit, and he has admitted in some interviews that he handled that poorly. But if you had a specific role for him, I think there would be a role for his skill set. He could come in. He could be a nickel linebacker on third down. He's a great blitzer. We know that. I think he's got a winning mentality. I think the pressure on him during his first time with the Jets was so immense to try to carry the team. And he was the best player on the team. There was no question about it. He was the only reason to watch the Jets in under the Adam Gase era was Jamal Adams was sacking the quarterback or making some big hits. And so the situation has changed. The culture is better. The culture was bad under Adam Gase. And that's one of the reasons why Jamal wanted out. If you brought him into this team for a minimum contract in a very specific role, I think it could work. Now, that's just my opinion. I don't think the Jets will sign him, but I think it could work. I like Jamal Adams. I like the attitude he brings.
Yeah, I think he's got to quit begging on social media. I think it's not interested, not even remotely interested. And by the way, to be fair, he did play better at linebacker. PFF grade was 68, 69, not terrible in terms of his position. Out of 88 linebackers, he was 33rd in terms of rating. So at least there's some evidence there. Like he's not a scrub. He's not done. He was a gamer. But he the way he left, and I've got a pretty short memory with a lot of stuff there, but I'll never forget. And maybe it hits me and Jake, and I don't know what you're thinking, Jake, but maybe it hits guys like me and Jake differently than Rich, who is a true tried and a reporter. You know, listen, when I see him on Instagram Live smoking a cigar with a drink, celebrating his, you know, his leaving of the Jets, like, I don't forget that stuff. So to me, find somebody else who didn't make a mockery of the situation, also took shots at Woody Johnson, took shots at Adam Gase. That doesn't bother me that much because Adam Gase was one of the worst coaches ever that I've ever seen in my life, outside of maybe Aaron Glenn last year and Rich Kotite. But I am not interested. Like, I am holding a grudge, and the way you left matters to me, and his exit was so messy and sloppy. And I will attribute certain things to youth. I've made some youthful indiscretions. I think we all have. And certainly people can mature, but he was basically dancing on our grave. That video rubbed me the wrong way. Stay away. Not interested.
I actually was leaning way more towards BT until I started going through some of his comments, and there's a few of them from his Instagram on the screen, but then he was on Twitter. He did take accountability and own how poorly he handled everything. He said he was immature. He was 24 years old. I appreciate the fact that he's, you know, spoke glowingly about just how passionate Jet fans are, and he realizes that his career, because he went to Seattle, had one good year, and then got hurt. Like, he's known for being a Jet, and the fan base that drafted him wants nothing to do with him, so I think that does bother him. So I do respect the fact that he's owned the immaturity and all that. I don't know how much he has left at this stage of his career. Maybe he'd be good in that role that Rich described, you know, as a, you know, blitzing third down linebacker, but if they brought him in, I wouldn't be outraged about it. If you asked me this a year ago or 2 years ago, I mean, he was one of my favorite players the Jets ever had. And then for him to do what he did and rip the organization and force a trade when he was Mr. We're changing the culture and things are going to be different now and I'm going to be a leader and I don't want to go anywhere. And then for him to basically ask out and then crap on everyone on the way out, that really bothered me as a diehard fan. But I'm willing to give him a chance. I don't think the Jets are going to end up doing it.
I don't think so either. I think there's more of our personal willingness or acceptance of it. If it were to happen, I think we all agree it's not going to happen. But to me, like, self-preservation is a very interesting thing. And it's hard to delineate between truly maturing and just basically saying what you have to say that you think people want to hear because you're desperate for a job. I mean, you know, he's been bouncing around a little bit. He's not the same player. Sixth overall pick, all pro with the Jets, goes to Seattle, as Rich said, one really good year. Injured, played for the Lions for two games, went to the Raiders. Like, he's bouncing around. Like, the train's about to stop, and he's going to get off the train soon, and his career's going to be over. So does he really mean it? And I can't read his heart, so I won't say definitively no, because I want to be fair to another person. But I think it's more desperation and him knowing there's just not many options. So that's a hard no for me.
Yeah, I talked to Jamal in early February when I was researching a story on Sam Darnold. And, you know, we had a nice long talk. I do think he really loves New York, wishes it could have worked, and has admitted multiple times that he didn't handle the whole departure well. I mean, let's face it, he was immature when he left. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was very immature. I think he's learned a lot by that. I'm always willing to chalk some stuff up to immaturity. I think he'd be good, you know, if he were willing to accept a very specific role. I've seen on social media about, like, criticizing like the player he was. I mean, he was a good player. The Jets have not had a lot of good safeties in their history, as both of you guys know. I think he's one of the one or two best safeties in the Jet history. You know, I mean, so he was an all, he was a first team all pro. He was a Pro Bowl guy. Yeah, I know. He didn't intercept a lot of passes. We know that. But he was a force around the line of scrimmage. I'd say him and Victor Green would be my two Jet safeties all time for the
Jets.
What
about James Hasty?
James was a corner.
Oh, that's right. That's right. What am I saying? Yeah. There you go. Yep.
Corner, you know, obviously right. Reed would be the corner. Toss, yeah. But, you know, Victor Green and Jamal Adams would be my two safeties. Like, at their height, I think those were the two best that the Jets have had.
I mean, he won games for them in 2019 single-handedly. Very rarely does a safety, let alone a Jet safety, actually impact winning. I vividly remember him making the stop against Dak and the Cowboys in that game where Sam returned back from mono. They sent him on a blitz, yeah. And he got a huge pressure at the end. Yeah.
Like, how was that then?
He was a first-team all-pro like that year.
Darnold had like a 91-yard touchdown Daniel
Jones.
Pass that
remember
game.
The play with Daniel Jones where he just literally swiped it right out of his hand?
Pushed him. That was a good one. That was a great one, actually. That was good.
Yeah. So he was good. I mean, he was good. He did some immature things, but he was a good player, and I wish him well, and we'll see. I don't think it'll be here, but I hope he's in the league somewhere.
If you guys have a question, write it in. We're going to get to a little Q&A coming up. Rich, at this point, do you see the Jets making any other notable additions before training camp? I know in the past we talked maybe a veteran quarterback, but now that the Geno Smith situation seems to be resolved and he's not facing any serious issues from the police and the NFL doesn't seem like they're going to be involved, do you think the Jets could still sign that veteran quarterback? Where are we at in terms of that and just any other additions to the roster?
Yeah, you always have to be on the lookout right before training camp starts of any – you know, moves. Now, the good thing is for them, from their perspective, is they have all their draft picks signed. They have the guys who were deserving of extensions signed with Breece Hall and Joe Tippmann. So they got those out of the way. So they were really proactive to get that done. So they're going in a really good position contractual wise. Could they, the veteran quarterback thing is interesting. I would say they might wait a little into training camp to see a little bit more before they make that move. Who's out there, really? You're going to go and get Josh Dobbs? Is he really better than Zappe Cade? Or Klubnick?
Oh, Zappe.
You know, so
he could be. I mean, we don't know. Cade Klubnick's still a theory. We haven't seen him do a damn thing.
Yeah, that'll be one of the great storylines in training camp is just to see Cade Klubnick. I know he'll be the fan favorite. Because of his personality and because of the style of play, he moves around really well. He'll make some great scrambles. That'll get the fans excited. Those fans are at least who are allowed to be at training camp, which we talked about in the last episode. Not as many as past years, but Klubnick will be one of those daily storylines that I'll be following because if he shows out in training camp, and specifically the preseason games, I think he could be the number two.
That's going to be must follow stuff with Rich on social media. I mean, I can't wait to see those reports every day from you, Rich. I know. Quick question. You talk about the contracts being signed by the rookies. Sadiq okay with the surgery? He's going to be ready day one?
No, I'll admit I haven't checked. I've been on vacation. I haven't checked in on that one. But from what Aaron Glenn told me right at the end of the mini camp in June, I guess it was, that he had absolutely no doubt in his mind that he would be ready for training camp, so I'll take him at his word.
I got to see him on the field running by everybody. That 4.39 speed, let's go.
He's fast. He's fast.
BT, I'm glad you brought up Kenyon Sadiq because, as you guys know, we're brought to you by Prize Picks. I actually had Sadiq's lines pulled up as today's nice. Jet player we were going to feature.
This.
So this works out well. Here are Sadiq's numbers over at Prize Picks if you want to include them. In any of your future lineups, again, download the app and use the promo code HMA when you sign up. Sadiq, 3.5 receiving touchdowns and 449.5 receiving yards, 449.5 yards receiving. So, Rich, we'll give you the first word on this here. Would you go more or less on these rookie projections for Kenyon Sadiq?
Yeah, I'm going to go under on both of those, and I have two reasons for that. Number one, he's not the only tight end around here. They have two other tight ends with Mason Taylor and Jeremy Ruckert, so there'll be some distribution. It won't be all one guy. And the other reason is, and I've said this in the past about Sadiq on our show, he's not a finished product. You know, it's going to be a learning curve for him because he has not played a lot of tight end just 3 years in college. He didn't play it in high school. So there's going to be a learning curve. And I know Frank Reich has special ways that he wants to utilize to take advantage of that skill set, because he does have special speed. But I just think having missed the spring didn't help either. So I think he's a little bit behind. And so I'm going to go under on both of those.
I think I'm going to join you. I'm going to go less on both of those. Now, think about this. If he goes more on the yards, which is 450, based on the expected contributions by Mason Taylor, who we all have, you know, I'm not saying Tony Gonzalez hopes for, but he's obviously viable. He proved that when he's healthy. Do we really envision a Jets tight end combination of kind of sniffing 1,000 yards? Because that's kind of the neighborhood that you would be in. If you're thinking more for this, well, that's about 450. And then, you know, even if you go conservative, you know, 300-400 yards for Mason Taylor, that's 9. Ruckert might have a game where he goes for 50 or 60 yards. You're knocking on the door of 1,000 with A.D. Yeah. Mitchell, Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall more involved in the backfield. So I'm going to go less on both and hope I'm wrong.
I was trying to find a way to split the difference and go more on the touchdown number, but it's receiving touchdowns, not total touchdowns, because I can see the Jets, hopefully with Frank Reich being such a big advocate of why they drafted Sadiq in the first place, lining up Sadiq all over, where maybe, you know, he could be out of the backfield and in a toss play, he'd get a rushing touchdown and some looks. I could see some creative ways to try and deploy him here. So I was on the fence. I was close on the touchdown number, but I'll agree with you guys and I'll go less on each, because I do think, you know, the way you watch Sadiq at Oregon, they lined him up out of the backfield. He's in the slot. He's in line. They played him on the outside. He lined up everywhere you can line up as a skill player in their offense.
Rich, you talk about a little bit of a lack of polish. Still has to tighten up some aspects of the position. Little case of the dropsies. A little bit. I mean, he's got it, and he'll get better at that. But yeah, I would be very surprised if, like, by the end of the year, even if he's not very active early, where there's not a play or two, like, where he slices everybody up and houses one for 60 or 70 and just outruns, you know, a nickel or safety or a corner, a lot, like everybody. Like, I think there's going to be a play or two where we're just like, wow, okay, what's the next chapter for him as he learns the game more, tightens up in the weight room, and learns how to catch the ball more effectively?
Yeah, he had 6 drops at Oregon last year. I think that led the nation for tight ends. I mean, you want to see those flashes. That's why you drafted him so highly. I remember, and I'm not comparing the two players, but I mean, I don't know if Jake will remember him, but I know BT will. Johnny Mitchell.
Yes.
You know, coming. I mean, he was a guy, a first round pick. I think they were drafted right around the same spot. Johnny had immense talent. One of the most physically gifted players I've ever seen, and he could take a play, and he did, and go to the house, but just wildly inconsistent and immature. And I'm not saying that's the case with Kenyon Sadiq at all, but you're eventually looking for that kind of consistency. I just looked it up. Mason Taylor had 369 receiving yards last year and 1 touchdown.
And he was hurt.
And he was banged up towards the end, really didn't play because of the neck injury. So, yeah, I'm pretty confident that I'd be surprised if Sadiq went 450 or higher. But you're right, BT, I agree. He could make a couple of splash plays that will say, fans will be saying, that guy's got a future.
You read my mind. Actually, as I don't know if it was Jake or you prior, I wrote down Johnny Mitchell. I wanted to get back to it. Like, yeah, and I know that you're not saying that there's a comparison where Mitchell was a little immature. We just got to make sure, you know, Sadiq gets up to speed from a football perspective. Johnny was a little bit of a mess with the playbook. I remember here, and you were around the team, I remember hearing, like, really, they leaned on Boomer quite a bit. I think Boomer really liked him. Boomer size.
He roomed with him.
I think they roomed together. Yeah, I thought they roomed together to try to accelerate his maturity. Never worked. But boy, when he was coming out of Jake, just look at some footage of him. I know you know the name, of course. Nebraska, early Jets. Like he was the package, man. It just didn't work out.
I got a quick funny Johnny Mitchell story, because, you know, so he washes out with the Jets. Went out a couple other teams, but he did come back to the Jets, if you recall, under Parcells. I think it was Parcells' first year. And so they signed him to the roster, and he's in training camp. And then on the second day of training camp, he's gone. Like, he just gets up and leaves. And I asked Parcells at the press conference, like, did he talk to anyone? When did he leave? And Parcells said, he left with the crickets. Overnight, Mitchell left. And then, like, 2 weeks later, Johnny calls me, because we had kind of a relationship. He calls me and said, hey, I really want to come back. I made a mistake. You think Parcells would take me back? And it was a preseason game, so I had to get Parcells after the game. I went up to him in his office at the old stadium, and I said, you know, hey, Bill, I just talked to Johnny Mitchell today. He wants to know if you give him another chance. And I can't say, I don't think I can say on the air what Parcells' response was. He basically said, tell him to go F himself.
Wow. And
yeah. So I guess Johnny's not coming back. Johnny tried to. Johnny was a good-hearted person who was he just got thrown into this at a very early age.
Did he go to Cincy after that? Where did he go after the Jets before he came back? Cincy?
Maybe New Orleans, I want to say.
I forgot. I was pumped when they drafted him.
Yeah, Boomer tried to take him under his wing. Oh, okay. And, you know, they roomed together on the road.
Yeah.
And Boomer's got some funny Johnny Mitchell stories, but Johnny had some crazy – like athletic plays. I mean, a freak of nature.
Yep.
That's an all-time story there. So that is great. And I'll tell you what, this is why Rich is one of the best sports writers out there. Congrats to you, Rich. I saw you posted the trophy.
Yay!
You won the Sports Writer of the Year award from the NSMA, the National Sports Media Association.
That actually happened a few months ago. While I was away on vacation, the plaque came in the mail. And so they encourage you to post it on social media. So I did, you know, thank you. Very, very cool honor and very humbled and honored. Very nice thing.
Rich, the only thing that's going to be better than that is when we hit 100,000 subs for the Jets Collective and for Jake's show and for BT Unleashed, you get something nice from YouTube. So that might usurp that. It might not. But what is the best award you've ever gotten, Rich? I know you've gotten quite a bit.
You know, that's it.
Any Hall of Fames?
I'm actually in two Hall of Fames.
Here we go.
Wow.
I'm in the Suffolk County Hall of Fame on Long Island. Nice. Not because I was a great athlete in high school. I think we all know that, just because of writing. And also in my high school Hall of Fame. So those were all cool. They're all great honors. I mean, it's just, you know, I hate talking about it, but it's always very touching when something like that happens.
Well, that's why I asked you, because I knew you wouldn't volunteer. But that's why we love you, Rich. You're humble.
Got a few.
Attaboy.
Now, BT, I got something for you, because I want to get this on the record. So I'm doing radio today before the show, and I had your guy Sal Licata on, dressed up in a full clown costume. And I said to him, and I said to everyone on the radio today, if Aaron Glenn leads the Jets to the playoffs this year, I will do the same thing Sal did, because he called Knicks coach Mike Brown, infamously he called him Mike Clown. So Sal dressed up as a clown to kind of pay off, you know, his incorrect take. I said I'd do the same thing, because I've been the biggest, critic of Aaron Glenn. If he leads the Jets, I'm not saying the Super Bowl, but how about just to the playoffs? I will dress up like a clown like Sal did.
I like it. Maybe not a clown. Because I think that's his thing, but maybe something else where it's an obvious physical admission that you messed up and that you took ownership of it like a man, which we know that you will. I mean, this guy's out of his mind. I have heard, worked with Sal for a couple of years, and I loved it. We had a lot of fun. I've heard him say some crazy things. I really think, and me too, but I think that the craziest thing that he said was that. I mean, the guy hadn't coached one game for the Knicks, and he called them Mike Clown before the season started. And I'm like, whoa. I'm like, you say what you want to say. I'm like, that's a little aggressive. That's a little bit early. But he manned up, as he always has. And I saw the video. He was cleaning the pool. I'm sure this was staged. It's all good. And his wife, who I know and love, she's awesome. She's berating him, and he's like, and he's got the clown makeup on, and he's skimming the pool, and she's on his ass, and he's like, just let me clean the pool in vintage typical Sal. So he paid it off, as I knew he would.
I like the suggestion from Sean, who says, Jake, you should dress like a superhero because Aaron Glenn has superpowers.
So
I'll dress up as the superhero of Aaron Glenn's choice. Rich, if you could facilitate the superhero, ask Glenn what his favorite superhero is, and I'll dress up for that for AG.
That's good. That's money out of
that's
the
good.
Shoot. That's
all
tough
right,
to beat.
Remember that.
Wow.
Let's jot that down.
Love it. Let's go, AG. All right, a little Q&A before we wrap up the show. The super chat is from the Big Fella. Thank you, Big Fella, for your support. Do you think the Jets make a play for Ethan Posick? Myers is the weak link of this line and was inconsistent at snapping last season. Rich, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think the Jets like Josh Myers, because you know, I don't think he had any bad snaps last year. He's a really smart guy. I think they appreciate that, having that kind of cerebral guy in the middle of the offensive line. They gave him an extension for a reason. I mean, so I think they like him. I mean, is he, you know, Tyler Lindenbaum? No, he's not on that level. But I think he's a pretty good blue-collar type center, and I think the Jets are happy with him.
They should be, and I like him as well. But that wouldn't prevent me from seriously investigating this. I was actually reading the story this morning. I mean, you know, the Jets, you know, they had – once ABT went down, their, as you guys know, their combination was set. They played every single game together. So the likelihood of that happening again – not to be negative, because I'm usually positive, is very small. I mean, you just don't get that too often in the NFL nowadays, where guys play, you know, five guys play 17 straight games, so, and then 34 games. Now, you know, it could be another position on the line. It's a strength. I wouldn't say it's a home run strength, but I think the Jets O-line is a solid double off the wall, and I think trending toward a triple. And if I could bring in a reinforcement, that's how good I think the O-line is, then I would do it. They've got salary cap space. Be proactive. Get involved if the number's too high. Like, if you can't do it and it doesn't make sense business-wise, I get it. But not to explore it, I think that that would be a missed opportunity. They should.
Yeah. I'd be open to it.
If something happened to Myers, they would just move Tippmann to center. You know, that would be their backup center.
Yeah. Yeah, but then Tippmann's spot would get weaker. I mean, you know, like, so you got to play that game. So you want to almost be proactive. Yeah. I hear you. I mean, we'll see. I like it.
Peter Kasher says, Rich, you're nuts. Adams stinks. So Peter Kasher not forgiving Jamal Adams, which is how I think a lot of Jet fans feel. But he doesn't stink, Peter. He was a first-team All-Pro with the Jets. Come on.
Yeah, he was. Rich, Rich not punching back on that. Not much to say.
I mean, he had some rough years in Seattle because it was all injury-based. I mean, there's no doubt he was a dynamic player for the Jets.
Yep.
Had the Jets, and I don't want to keep rehashing, had they had a better coaching situation, a better culture, I think Jamal would have been more invested in the franchise. He was just sick of it and wanted to get out at that particular time.
Johnny Boy says, question for the panel. The Knicks sweeping the ESPYs last night. By the way, Brady Cook somehow got a ticket to the ESPYs. I saw he was there. He goes to the finals.
What?
He goes to the ESPYs. He's,
you know, was he sweeping up the stage when they finished up?
What was he was in the stands. He was Brady Cook had the greatest offseason, man. You play quarterback for a 3-win team. You don't win a start, and you get to do all these things anyway. It's pretty nice. Yeah. Anyway, he goes, Johnny's question is, what would it take for the Jets to make a run like that? Which current Jet players are comparable to that Knicks team? So basically, I guess it's not apples to apples because different sports, but what foundational players currently on the Jets could you see being on a team that eventually wins a championship is how I interpreted his question.
I would say a few old linemen. I would say Garrett Wilson. I would say hopefully Sadiq. I would say Mason Taylor. I would say Breece Hall. Hopefully Bailey. McDonald, maybe a lesser role on a Super Bowl team, but I think McDonald could play on a team of that caliber. We'll see what kind of juice Fitzpatrick still has on the third level, but you'd have to give him respect. Yeah, that just seems far-fetched. I mean, it's we're all wrapped up, and we're still drunk from the Knicks parade, but let's not get nuts here, Rich.
Yeah, they don't have Brunson, the Jets. I mean, they don't have the quarterback, and so that's the big difference between it. I mean, we could compare. I mean, Garrett Wilson would kind of be like maybe OG, you know, like the really athletic guy who can make the acrobatic play. Who would Carl Anthony Towns be? Maybe that would be like
Membu.
Lineman,
you know, yeah. That's a little bit of I mean, you know, he's a foundational player, and the Jets don't have many of them. He's one of them, and so you could make some. We could have some fun with the comparisons, but the bottom line is they don't have that galvanizing quarterback that Jalen Brunson was. So
yeah, they're not winning. They're not winning the Super Bowl. I might have the best comparison here, though, and it's not going to happen to this extent. But we'll play the game. Let's see. So Brunson, second round, despite a championship at Nova, all the great accolades, right? Klubnik was, and I'm not even as high on Klubnik. I like him, but I think some of this is getting a little bit out of a little nuts with Klubnik here by everybody. But he's a quarterback. Everybody needs a quarterback in the NFL. He was bypassed. Jets moved up. 17, 18 spots took him. Maybe a loose connection to overlooked point guard and the overlooked quarterback. That's probably the best that I can come up with. And let's just hope, you know, but it's I mean, come on. Back to reality.
Let's get back to reality.
Yes.
This one real quick from JQuest before we wrap up our show here. Question for Rich. It's about training camp. Is training camp going to be the normal field with the stands, or is it going to be on the other field?
So they use both of those grass fields because, I mean, obviously they want to be on grass, you know, and actually their turf field is now a weightlifting room. So they don't have use of that. Not that they would use it anyway, but I think where the main bleachers usually are, I think a lot of practices will be there, but they also rotate fields because they don't want to rip apart one field. So they have a system where they balance it and they rotate it. And of course, the Buccaneers are going to be there for a couple of days with joint practices. And so they'll use all the fields then to get that, you know, going. But they always rotate on the grass fields in training camp.
This one's from Boy Green, our last one. You guys going to do something together as the Jets Collective week one in Tennessee, podcast appearance at a bar or something. Stay tuned for that, Boy Green, because I got to make sure I get Rich and BT to the big event I'm throwing at Barstool Nashville, because we already got like 300-something Jet fans who are going to be there.
Oh, I get that many. Wow, that's a good number.
So everyone's going to Nashville, it sounds like, for week one. That's the Jets Super Bowl game this year.
We got to find a way to do something. This would be a little tricky, certainly. You and I could do something on Sunday, Jake, but obviously, Richie's going to be at the field extra early. He's got different responsibilities. Post-game, he's wrapped up writing, doing the interviews. So, and I know I'm flying out right after it. But, you know, that Saturday night, I mean, all bets are off in Nashville. Put it that way.
Stay tuned. We're going to be there. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Coming up quick.
Another episode of The Collective in the books. Always a blast. BT, we missed you this weekend. Rich, great to hang out with you for a little while on Saturday. Thanks again to all the Jet fans who made the trip. It was awesome to see everyone in person.
Looking forward to next week. Guys, we're around. We're getting there. Training camp is about to start, and on the 28th, the players report. So we're almost there.
Rich, any plans like one more beach getaway, fishing? Like, you know, you're about to be holed up for a long time.
You know, just hanging around here, and hopefully the weather will be good so I get in the pool a little bit. Hopefully we can get this smoke cleared out of here that's been hovering over the city. My softball game got canceled. We're in the middle of our second game today in our doubleheader, and they stopped it because of the air quality was
too bad.
So hopefully we can get some good weather back and, you know, hang out at the pool here and maybe take some short trips.
Blame Canada. The wildfires in Canada causing the air issues.
Yeah. Wildfire is a serious issue everywhere. It's terrible. It's unfortunate.
Yeah. Thanks again to everyone who watched. Make sure you like the video. Subscribe to the channel. Again, shout out to Prize Picks for being our presenting sponsor. Get some Prize Pick lineups made for the Jets and the Titans week one. Use that code HMA when you sign out. Check out the podcast on Spotify, Apple, and iHeart. For Rich Cimini and Brandon Tierney, this is Jake Asman saying, have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon on the Jets Collective.